We're continuing the book of Shoftim, the book of Judges, in what's called chapter 9. Gideon, otherwise known as Yerubal, goes home. He does not take the leadership of the Jewish people. He tells them be faithful to Hashem. He has 70 children. He has many wives. And he has a daughter from a concubine in Shechem. And he names him Avimelech, which is very strange because that's not a Jewish name. He passes away in ripe old age. And the Jewish people veer off the beaten path. They start worshipping the Baal. And Avimelech goes to his relatives in Shechem and he says to them, look, why do you guys need all these, my whole family should be in charge of you guys. Why shouldn't you have one person in charge of you? Now, really, he's a good politician because in essence, no one was in charge of them. No one took the leadership. As we saw, Gideon did not take the leadership. But a good leader makes the people feel threatened so that they want him as a leader. So that's what he does. He says, if everyone takes the reins over here, you'll have 70 different leaders. What do you need that for? Make sure, just remember, I'm your relative. So he convinces his uncles, and they speak to the leaders, and they give him 70 silver coins from their church, and Avimelech personally hires some mercenaries, some hitmen, and he takes them to his father's house, and with them he murders all his brothers, and he gathers them and slaughters them on one stone. What terrible cruelty! And the only one that manages to escape, their own brother, is Yotam, the little brother who managed to hide. And now the leaders of Shechem, they're not Jewish people, they're the leaders, they gather together and they anoint Avimelech as their king. And Yotam, his little brother, hears of this. And he goes and stands on top of Mount Gerizim and calls out and says, listen here, you leaders of Shechem, let God hear you too. The trees all went to anoint the king over them, and they told the olive tree, you be king over us. And the olive tree said, I'm used to honor humans, I'm used to honor God. They burned from me before Hashem. They used me to anoint people. I'm going to go and just spend my time shading all of you, being your king. So they went to the fig tree, and again the fig tree said, I can't be your king. I still have sweetness to offer. I still have good bounty to offer. I don't have time to just shade all of you and be your king. So they went to the grapevine, and the grapevine said, I can't be your king. I'm used to make God happy. It's over me when they libate my wine that they sing songs before Hashem in the temple. I make human beings happy when they drink me. I can't just stand and give you all shade. And the trees went to the thorn bush and said, you be king over us. So the thorn bush has nothing good to offer people other than you could burn it. So the thorn bush said, if you guys are coming to anoint me in sincerity, so then come, stay in my shade. Now the thorn bush doesn't have too much shade. He doesn't have leaves. And if you guys were just teasing, so then let a fire, I know how to make fire, let fire come out of me and consume everything down to the tallest cedar trees. And this is an allegory which represents what the brothers did, what the uncles did, what they do. They took all the kids of Avimelech who were fine people and had them all killed. And who'd they save? The one murderer in the bunch. What is he good for? He's good for murdering. That's what you saved. That's the king you appointed. Well, wait and see what type of king he's going to be. So if you guys anointed Avimelech in good faith, and if you were kind and you paid Yerubal, my father, in kind for the good that he did for you, he risked his life on your behalf, and he saved you from the Midianites, you all murdered his 70 kids. You anointed Avimelech, the son of the maid, over you, just because he's your relative. If you think you've done it in good faith, so then you should all be happy. But if what you've done is unfair and unkind, then let he be a source of fire to destroy you, and let you be a source of fire to destroy him, and with that curse he runs away. Yeah?
You said that they weren't part of the tribes.
Right. Right. So I guess the Midianites were a threat to them as well, because the Midianites would come. They were a nomadic tribe. They had tons of camels and sheep, and then they'd come in and consume everything. And being that territorial, their territory was within Israel's territory, so I guess the Midianites were a threat to them as well.
But they're not really part of the sheep base.
Correct.
Who are they exactly?
The people of Shechem. We see that they weren't Jewish. So Avimelech rules for 3 years, and then the curse comes true, and there starts being ill will between him and the leaders of Shechem. And the people of Shechem start ambushing his chariots as they come by. They steal from his men. And Avimelech hears of this. And then a man named Gaal ben Eved, a non-Jew, comes to Shechem. And here you'll see why I said that the people of Shechem were not Jewish at the time. And the people of Shechem have good faith in Gaal. And they're harvesting their grapes. And this is a time where they rejoice over all the bounty that they'd bring in. And so they're partying. And they come to their church. And they eat. And they drink. And they curse Avimelech. So Gaal ben Eved gets up and says, "Who's this Avimelech? We're all people of Shechem. Who's the governor here? Zvul, what's he worth? Why don't we go back to our ancestry? Why don't we find ourselves a king from the people of Hamor, from the ancient tribes that lived here in Shechem back in the days when Yaakov came here? So we know who is the royal family. Why should we be under him? His father's a Jew. If I would only be the leader here, I'd remove Avimelech. And I tell Avimelech, I challenge you, bring out your armies, let's see you." Now, they're all drinking and partying, but the governor, Zevul, Avimelech's governor, standing right there, he hears what's going on. He gets pretty upset. He's saying, "Okay, he's riling up the people against me and against Avimelech. Who's going to be the first to get killed? The ambassador, you know, the governor. Zevul knows his life is on the line." So he gets upset. He sends a message to Avimelech and tells him, you have to understand that the city is preparing to lay siege on you. The people here in the city are getting ready to go out against you. You come here and you prevent that by coming during the night. Take the men you have with you, prepare an ambush out in the field, and when the sun shines, you can spread out on the city, and you'll see that the people are not prepared for war. They're going out to harvest, and you'll do what you have to do. So Avimelech takes his men, and in those days they didn't travel at night. The only one we know traveled at night was Avimelech here, and King David. That was one of King David's tactics at war. He'd travel at night. But no one else did because you couldn't see where you were going. It was very dangerous. So he comes that night and they prepare four battalions to attack from four different directions. And Gaal comes out as the people are going out of the city. And he sees people coming from the mountaintops and he tells Zvul, "What's going on here? Aren't there people coming off the mountains?" And Zvul says, "No, you know, the shadow shifts as the sun rises. The shadow of the mountain pulls back. That's what you're seeing moving." So they're standing there. And a few minutes later, Gaal says, "Wait a second, I see people. And I see one of the people with his men are coming from that angle over there." And Zvul says, "Okay, where's your big mouth now? You were saying... why should we serve Avimelech? That's the one you were talking about. Go, now fight him." So Gaal, he puts his money where his mouth is. He leads the people of Shechem. He leads the leaders and fights Avimelech. And Avimelech is victorious and Gaal flees. And Avimelech continues killing people and the corpses are falling till the gates of Shechem. Avimelech goes in hiding and Zvul now has the backing of Avimelech. So he kicks Gaal and his brothers out of the city of Shechem. The next morning, the people think everything's over. They leave the city. They go out to the fields to harvest again. Avimelech hears that, and again, he sets up an ambush. But this time, he sets up the ambush differently. He leads the ambush into the city and captures the gates, so the people won't be able to run back into the city. And his two other battalions, he sends them to attack the people out in the field. Now, Avimelech himself leads his battalion into the city, and all day he fights the city until he captures the city, kills everyone in the city, and destroys the city and plants the city with salt. So you'd never be able to plant there again. It would take many, many years till you'd ever have anything fertile in Shechem. There was an area called the Tower of Shechem, and when they heard that this was going on, so they went to a citadel called Beit El Berit, one of their churches, and Avimelech hears that people have gathered in that citadel, so he goes with his men, and he starts cutting down trees, branches of trees, and he brings it to the tower, and he tells the people, "Do like me," so they bring branches, and they light the citadel, and the people inside all are burnt alive. You have about 1,000 men and women that Avimelech burns alive. He then goes on to the city of Tebetz and conquers it. And inside the city, again, they had a citadel, they had a fortress, and the people fled to the fortress. So they lock the door, and they're running up to the tower. And Avimelech again figures, okay, I'll burn down this one like I did the other one. And as he's approaching the tower, a woman throws down the upper part of a millstone on his head and crushes his skull. And he sees that's it, he's finished, he's going to die. So he tells his arms bearer, draw your sword and kill me. It shouldn't be my reputation that everyone's going to say, he was killed by a woman. So his own lad kills him. And when his army sees that he's dead, they have no interest in fighting the people of Shechem. So they all go back home. And this was the fulfillment of Yotam's curse. That here Avimelech destroyed the people of Shechem. And ultimately, the people of Shechem destroyed Avimelech.
He killed himself.
Well, he was dead. He killed a dead man. I mean, he would have died anyways. After that, we have a few leaders who we don't know much about. Tola ben Pua, Ya'ir HaGiladi. We're told Yair had 30 sons, and each one rode on their special donkey, and they owned 30 towns that are known as Chavot Yair. And the Jewish people continue sinning, they go the pagan ways, and the Navi lists 7 different idols they'd worship, and they didn't turn to Hashem. And Hashem said, I'm worse than the Turmus bean. There's a bean called Turmus, which you have to cook 7 times, and only then it becomes sweet. So God says, you know, ordinarily you try 7 different options. Eventually you come back to the right one. But I'm worse than the Turmus bean. You tried 7 different types of idols and you didn't come back to me. So Hashem gets upset and he gives us in the hands of the Philistines and the Ammonites. And for 18 years we're under their oppression. And they were really in control of the eastern side of the Jordan. Now, they started entering the land of Judea and the tribe of Benjamin, and the people were suffering. So they turned to Hashem, and they say, okay, we did wrong. And Hashem says, I saved you from 7 nations, and you left me. You went to worship other gods. Go talk to them. What are you turning to me now? So the people say, okay, we're wrong, but you help us out today. And they start purging from within. They start taking all the idols from within and getting rid of them. And when Hashem sees that, so the Navi uses a term, Hashem couldn't handle it. And this is an idea we'll find again and again in the Navi, that it's as though Hashem says, I can't handle that my kids are suffering. So the Ammonites gather, and the Jewish people gather, and they're looking for a leader, but they don't have a leader. And now the story pauses and goes off to tell us some history. We're talking about Gilad, the eastern side of the Jordan. Now the eastern side of the Jordan was a problematic territory. Throughout Jewish history it was problematic. There were many murderers there. There was a whole mafia going on there, on the eastern side of the Jordan. And you're talking about 2.5 tribes that were not really connected. They didn't go up to the temple. They were outside Israel. They didn't have the mitzvot of the land of Israel. They didn't frequent the temple. They weren't Olesh, Olesh, or Golim. They weren't a part of the unity of the Jewish people, and they were the first to be exiled. And we see time and again that they were persecuted, and even though they were the most powerful warriors, their education system was problematic because they started off with a generation that were single parents, meaning the first generation grew up with all their dads being out in Israel conquering the land of Israel. You had 14 years where they had no dads. All the parents were out, all the fathers were out there conquering, and the mothers were bringing up the kids. And the kids grew up to be hippies, and the kids didn't... No, that's what the Midrash says, that the kids grew their hair long and grew their beards long, and they were unkempt, and that's what the Midrash says, that they... So you had a situation where things weren't right from the beginning, and then they just got worse. You had this separation, you had the people out there, and that's why they were the first to be exiled, and that's why throughout the book of Judges and later on you find that they were the most persecuted geographically. They were in a strategically bad place. They were the first to have to contend with an enemy. So even though they were a formidable enemy, I mean, they had good forces, they were a strong army, but at the end of the day, they were the first to go, and they were the first to be exiled.
What period of time? This is after Judges?
This is during Judges and First Temple, both. Yeah.
It says they kept their beards unkempt. I heard a class on shaving in those times, and you said that there was either just a powder or you didn't shave. So how would you trim your beard?
What's the problem? They kept their beards trimmed.
How
They didn't shave with scissors.
You can cut a bit of scissors?
Sure.
Yeah, it's not considered sure. Like using a blade.
That's when it's near your face, but if you want to straighten a beard like Herzl, you know, you can have a, you know, that works.
So this period is like through Judges first temple, and when you mention churches, really just the pagan
temple, right.
Christian churches.
Right. I meant the pagan temple, right. So we have a mafioso, the top mafioso, his name is Yiftach. And he has a problem that the mob family doesn't want him. Because why? Because his father had a woman from another tribe. So they said he's the illegitimate son, you know, so he doesn't inherit anything. And the problem is that the elders of the city of Gilad, they backed this ruling and they basically kicked him out and they wouldn't let him inherit. Now that's not Torah ruling. Halachically, he had every right. He was his son just like the others. But they told him, get out of here. You're not inheriting. You're not getting a piece of the inheritance. So Yiftach has no choice. He leaves town. And Yiftach starts having his own band, his own mafia. He knows what to do. And now that there's a war, and they need someone to lead the battle against the Ammonites, so the elders come to Yiftach, and they say, hey Yiftach, remember us. We need you to lead the war against the Ammonites. So we want to appoint you general. So Yiftach tells the elders, hey, you hate me. You chased me out of my father's house. What are you coming to me now? You have problems. So the elders tell Yiftach, that's your right. That's why we came to you, because we have problems. Lead us to war. And when you will be victorious, we will appoint you governor over the whole territory of Gilad. So Yiftach says, no, that's not how it's going to work. If I come back and I'm victorious, of course I'm the governor. I don't need your say-so if I lead you to victory. So the elders say, okay, God will testify that we will do like you said, and we're going to appoint you head and leader, and right now. And that's what happens. They bring Yiftach back, and they make an inauguration ceremony. Yiftach says, you're not waiting till I'm victorious. Then obviously, you have to show that you're accepting me as leader now. And that you were in the wrong, and I'm in the right, and I'm a legitimate person. So they bring him back, and they appoint him as the general and the governor. And Yiftach leads the people first to have this inauguration before Hashem. And then Yiftach sends word to the Ammonite king, and he says, "What's our issue? What'd you come to fight my land for?" It's his land. He's governor now. Okay. So the king of Ammon sends the messengers, and he says, "Oh, come on! I just want peace." Our enemies always say they want peace. You'll see it here. You'll see it in King David's time. He says that the only issue is that you guys stole some of my territory. When you came out of Egypt, there's this whole territory here. Give it back and we'll have peace.
Wait, who's
David? The Ammonite king. So Yiftach sends messengers and he says, this is what Yiftach has to say. The Jewish people did not take any territory from the Ammonites. We didn't take from the Ammonites. We didn't take from the Moabites because God forbade it. When we came, so we sent messengers to the Edomites, and when the Edomites didn't let us go through, and the Moabites, and no one was nice to us. And then, when we were very careful, because God told us not to attack Ammonites, Moabites, Edomites, no one was nice to us. We asked you permission to enter the land of Israel. None of you did. And then we were attacked by the king of Sihon, and when he attacked us, we destroyed him and we took his territory. Years before that, Sihon conquered this territory from you. What does that have to do with us? We didn't take it from you. That's history. We have a tradition that God purposely had Sihon and the Ammonites have a war so that Sihon would conquer that territory. And then we were told, don't touch Ammonite territory, but we were allowed to take Sihon's territory, and that's what we did. So if you want, go look at your maps and you'll see that we didn't do anything. Now, let's get something straight. God gave us this land. And we conquered all these powerful kings that your people couldn't stand up to. Who'd we take it from? The kings that defeated your armies. So, just do a little bit of math. If we are stronger than the kings, who are stronger than you, then what are you starting up with us for? You think you're going to win? You go deal with what your pagan gods give you. And you see what they give you. You lost this territory. And we are going to deal with what God gives us. And you see what God gave us. We are victorious. You think you're any better than Balak, the Moabite king? He tried fighting with us, but he didn't dare lift the sword and attack us. You think you're any better than him? Why did you wake up now? It's been hundreds of years. Now you have a claim? And I didn't do anything wrong to you. So you're being wrong to me. And Hashem, who is the fair judge, he will judge between us and you. So the Ammonite king isn't interested. And Yiftach leads the people. He has a godly spirit descend on him. And he leads the people. And he takes a vow as he goes into war. Now, a person is allowed to take a vow in a time of danger. Even though ordinarily you're not supposed to take a vow in a time of danger, you're allowed to. And he says, if you let me be victorious over the Ammonites, so then the first thing to greet me from my home, from the doors of my home, when I come back in peace, I will offer to you and dedicate to you as an elevation offering. And Yiftach attacks, and Hashem makes him victorious, and he destroys 20 of their cities, and the Ammonites are completely subservient. That's it. Game over. They give up. And Yiftach is headed home. He said, the first thing that greets me from the doors of my house, and he's coming home, and he has one daughter. He has no other children. And she comes out to greet him with her tambourine and dancing. And when he sees her, he tears his clothing and he says, whoa, my daughter, you brought me to my knees. And you've really joined my enemies. I took a vow. And now I have no way back. So she tells him, Dad, you took a vow, so you'll have to do your vow, what you vowed. But, let's be thankful. Look, Hashem gave you victory. So we have a tradition that there was a whole long conversation going on here. She said, he was an Amoritz, he didn't know Torah, so he figured, I'm going to have to sacrifice you. So she said to him, gee, Yaakov Avinu says to God, whatever you give me, I'll tithe, I'll give you a tenth. You remember Yaakov Avinu sacrificing one of his kids? He had 10 kids. Why didn't he sacrifice one of them? So you see, it doesn't work that way, Dad. So he says, I don't have answers to all your questions, but this is what I promise, this is what I'm going to do. So she tries different angles, and she's not successful. Now, the people hear about this, and there's a great leader named Pinchas. And Pinchas says, well, right, it's the same Pinchas from Moshe Rabbeinu's time. He's a zealot, right? So Pinchas says, I can annul his vow. Let him come to me.
He's still alive.
Yeah. Yiftach says, he can annul my vow, but I'm the chief general. I'm the big boss here. Let him come to me. And so Pinchas doesn't go to Yiftach. Yiftach doesn't go to Pinchas. And she comes to her father and says, give me 2 months. And let me go to wail on the mountains, weep over my virginity with my friends. And Yiftach says, fine, you could have those 2 months. Yeah?
This between Pinchas and Yiftach, is that actually written in Nevi'im, or is
it no. Medrash.
Oh, okay, Medrash.
Gemara. So she goes, and then he fulfills his vow with her, and she never was married, and then there became a custom that every year the girls would go to lament with the daughter of Yiftach, the Giladi, 4 days out of the year. What's going on here? What did he do? It doesn't say. It keeps it silent. What are they going to weep for? So there are two understandings among the commentaries. One understanding says that he slaughtered her, and the girls would come out and weep over her, that she never got married, she never built a family, and what happened to her? Poor girl, her father wasn't learned. He thinks he's doing the most pious thing in the world, and he's really sinning. He's doing something that God never wanted. The prophet will later on say, God says, I never said it, I never wanted it, I never thought it. Using humanistic terms. The other understanding says, no, what he did was he locked her up in a cabin, and she became a hermit, where she'd have to spend all her days and nights praying to God. He'd bring her food, but that was it. She was locked up. She'd never talk to anyone. And 4 days a year, the girls would come and weep by her cabin over the fact that this is her life. So Yiftach thinks that he's doing a great deed, and he's causing his daughter to go out of her mind, because here he's dedicated her to Hashem. So he locks her up in a cabin where she will spend the time praying. And here Chazal give us that rule, which is so important. Chazal say, Lo amaretz chassid. The person who isn't learned cannot be pious. He might mean to be pious, he might have good intentions, but he could end up being the most cruel person in the world. Look at Yiftach. He slaughters his own daughter. Well, however you're going to cut it, he did a terrible thing to his daughter, with the intention of being pious. Chazal say you want to be pious, learn. If you don't learn, so then you're not going to do well when you're trying to be pious. Yeah?
Why would Hashem bring Yitzchak, his only daughter, if he knew he was not ours and that he didn't know how to do?
So the whys of all of Jewish history deserve an answer. Not just this why. Why did the Jewish people suffer 400 years in Egypt? Why did Ephraim have to be barren? Okay, 210. Okay. So the tribe of Ephraim get all upset and they cross over the Jordan and they advance northward to Yiftach and they say, what did you go in and lead an attack against the Ammonites and you didn't tell us to join the war and you endangered everyone? We're going to burn down your house over you. And one understanding has it that they were upset really over what he did to his daughter. But at any rate, they came with the claim, you endangered the people of Israel, you should have let us know you're going to war. Now remember, the tribe of Ephraim wasn't too learned. They were a bunch of shepherds. And, if you recall, they did the same thing to Gidon. But Gidon was a modest man, so Gidon appeased them. He said, you guys are better than me. Look at what a great victory you did. You captured the two kings. Yiftach does no such thing. Yiftach says, you know, I had a problem with the Ammonites. The Ammonites were threatening me. And you knew full well, we sent messages out throughout Israel, who's going to come help us? No one showed up. And when we saw that none of you showed up, so we risked our lives, and we went and took the Ammonites on, and God gave us success, and now you're coming and fighting with me? Yiftach gathers his men, and he goes to war against the tribe of Ephraim. And they capture the waterways to cross back into Israel, and they don't let the tribe of Ephraim go back home. And whenever a person would try to cross the waterways, so Yiftach's men would ask him, are you from the tribe of Ephraim? And the man would say, no, of course not. So they tell him, okay, say the word Shibolet. And the tribe of Ephraim, they couldn't say a shin. They'd say Sibolet. They couldn't get it right. And they'd slaughter them. They'd kill them on the spot. And they killed 42,000 men. 42,000 Jews were killed by their own brethren. Look at that. Jewish history has these terrible stories. So, what?
With all the factiousness, we're getting better.
Right. That's what I said after Gush Katif. They said, never in Jewish history did something so terrible happen. I said, no, much worse things happen in Jewish history. You know, this is bad. But we've done worse. So, Yiftach is judged for 6 years, and Hashem holds it against him that he did such a thing to his daughter. And so he dies a terrible death where his limbs fall off as he's walking, and he's buried all over the eastern side of the Jordan because hey, everywhere he'd go, he'd leave a finger, he'd leave a leg, leave something, and Yiftach passes away. The next story we're up to is the story of Ivtan. So you have a situation where people are already thinking about a king, they want a king, they're dying for a king, and there's a man named Avimelech who comes from the tribe of Judea, and he keeps, Elimelech, and he keeps thinking he's going to be king. Now Elimelech is married to a very pious woman named Naomi. They have two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, and there's a famine. The people are sinning, there's thievery, people aren't kind to one another. And so Elimelech says, I'm going to go to Chutzlaretz, and then I'm going to come in like the great Messiah on my chariot and save the Jewish people. And he goes out into Chutzlaretz, instead of sticking around and saving the people. And when the people see that, so the economy's bad, you're going to Chutzlaretz. So everyone loses all hope, and he really does a blow to the people. And so he dies, and his two children marry Moabite women, the daughters of the king of Moab, the daughters of Eglon. Remember, we learned about him. They marry two girls named Ruth and Orpah. And so Mahlon marries Ruth, Chilion marries Orpah, they die, and the woman is left penniless, and she comes back to the land of Israel, and Ruth comes with her and converts to Judaism. And then we know the whole story, how she meets up with Ivtzan, who is our next leader, Boaz. He's an old man. He had 30 sons and 30 daughters, and they all died in his lifetime. And so Boaz is left childless and wifeless, and his whole life is destroyed before his eyes, but he is so pious, it is his prayer that brings rain, and the famine is over, and there starts being bounty in Israel. And then he sees the pious young lady, Ruth, and we will learn the whole story of Ruth when it comes Shavuos time, and he marries her. And he marries her and dies that night. He drops dead that night. So he dies without children, All his children are dead. His wife is dead. And he is dead. What a tragedy. But what he doesn't know is that he left behind the seed. That one night of having wed Ruth leaves Ruth pregnant, and that's going to bring the Mashiach. That's going to bring King David. But Ruth is a tragedy. You know, Ruth, her first husband died, her second husband died, and she has to bring up the kid all alone. So, Boaz, otherwise known as Ivtzan, is the judge for 7 years. He dies. He's buried in Beit Lechem. After that, we have a Lono Zvuloni, who's judge for 10 years. And then Avdon ben Hillel Piratoni, he has 40 sons and 30 grandchildren. He has 70 cities that his children are controlling and grandchildren. He's judged for 8 years and he passes away. The people continue sinning. And now we're up to the final chapters of the book of Judges, the book of Shoftim, where Hashem gives us into the hands of the Philistines, and we will not break free from the Philistines until King David. Meaning now, till the end of the book of Judges, we're going to have to contend with the Philistines. We're up to the story of Samson, Shimshon, and we're up to the final three stories of the book of Judges. But we will see that the Philistines remain a problem, a thorn in our thigh, until the end of the book of Judges, until King David takes them down. So this is where we're pausing for today. And Bezrat Shem, next week, you guys are invited to bring Ragalach or something. Amit Shem, we hope to finish the book of Judges next week and move on to Shmuel.